Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, June 3rd, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. We're about halfway through the week. Every week seems to get longer and longer. I pulled about an 18-hour shift yesterday, just trying to get everything done, shows cut, new shows ready to rock and roll, and all kinds of different things. But it's been a long week already for me. It is 52 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. Actually, we're starting to dry out from all that rain we had over the weekend. Supposed to get back up into the 80s here before the end of the week, so it should be a pretty nice weekend. So I want to get back to where we left off yesterday. The title of the show was Before the First Cup of Jewels, Mad Science Gone Mad, Bioterror, Pandemic Potential. And I know that sounds like fear porn, but it's really not when you start looking at all these crazy things that have been going on. Never before seen, hasn't been seen in 50 years. We have now this whole anthrax thing going on where they've been shipping samples around the globe wantonly for what they say is at least a year, but I could guarantee you it goes way further back than that. Started out with, like, I think it was 9 states. Now it's up to 28 locations in 9 states. We found out there was one other country, and that was South Korea, and now they bumped that up to 2 additional countries, Canada and Australia. So, as an update to that, I'd really like to take a look at now this news that came out this morning, well, early hours of this morning, probably from yesterday, a news clip stating that, yes, it can't get any worse, but yes, it can. Wait till there's more. Live anthrax may have been shipped from the Pentagon to the Pentagon. Yes, that's right, to themselves. And here, you know, for people who don't get what the big deal is here, we have all these crazy pathogens going on, floating around the globe, never before seen, hasn't been seen in 50 years, and we dug in deep to the historical beginnings of the United States biowarfare program a while back. You can go back and look at those in the archives. It was a pretty deep dive. It was pretty good. And we connected some dots between the biowarfare program that apparently is no longer going on with some of the crazy things that we're seeing today. And President Nixon, I've mentioned this many times, announced back when he ended the biowarfare program, had stated that we were going to go to a more defensive posture and create vaccinations against pathogens as our strategy. So now we see where that's kind of spun for the last 20 or 30 years. And one of the things we discovered is that they had been using insects as disease vectors. We'll take a look at something to do with ticks later on, because there's all these new tick-borne diseases out there everywhere. But something else that we've seen the drumbeat on since probably 2001 was this whole anthrax story and how dangerous anthrax is. And oh my God, terrorists under every bed, they're going to have anthrax. As now we've had complete, quote-unquote, what they want us to believe, incompetence, showing that it's been spread across the globe. And oh, hey, guess what? The procedure that we've been using to deactivate this virulent biopathogen doesn't seem to be working 100%. And when we're sending out big white baggies full of dust, you probably want to make sure that all those little suckers are dead. Anyway, a video came out late last night, early hours of this morning, titled Live Anthrax May Have Been Shipped by Pentagon to Pentagon, which is just so amazing. So hold on, let me connect here. Da, 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 da. I'm a little bit behind. Da, 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 da. All right, let me get out there.
and has just learned exclusively the Pentagon now investigating whether it, the Department of Defense here in the Pentagon, accidentally, inadvertently received a shipment of live anthrax as part of this.
The Pentagon shipped the Pentagon live anthrax. I mean, come on, guys. How much more ridiculous can this get? How much more incompetence can we see before we say, whoa, you people do not show any type of proper authority to be maintaining some of the most dangerous materials on the planet? And if I didn't know any better, I would honestly think that all this bumbling idiocy that's going on, or apparently going on, almost would be a setup here. Don't you think? The Department of Defense shipped itself live anthrax. Sounds like a Saturday Night Live skit, to be honest with you.
Overall investigation. Let's regroup here. There were three shipments. They were supposed to be dead anthrax that went to 12 states and three countries and about 30 different facilities. In the last several minutes, CNN...
So it went from 25 to 30 facilities now. Ba-ba-boom.
And has learned exclusively the Pentagon Police Force, the Pentagon Force Protection Agency, the cops that protect everyone at the Pentagon, they are on the list of facilities that received a suspect shipment. Now they have to go back, they have to test it and determine once and for all, did they inadvertently get live anthrax here at the Pentagon, or was it dead anthrax as it was supposed to be?
Why did the Pentagon police get anthrax? You know, I'm really questioning who all of these people and facilities are that are getting these materials that could be potentially deadly. And I know that they said, well, they were going to be doing some sort of new testing for biosensors and blah, 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 blah. Well, sure, except that anthrax all these years, it apparently seems this procedure you've been using and the CDC hasn't been effective.
The problem is the original batch did test live. Now everything has to be gone back through. You might ask yourself, why would the Pentagon Police Force even have anthrax? Well, apparently, they regularly get these shipments of the dead anthrax. They use it to calibrate the chem bio detection equipment they have here around the Pentagon.
Hold a second. We use it to calibrate our equipment, but they're shipping. I mean, from what I was hearing yesterday, it's not like they're only shipping two freaking grains of anthrax. They're shipping like a big white bag of anthrax or a big freaking petri dish of anthrax. So there's still tens of millions of live spores in there, even after they put it through the X-ray or the gamma ray machine. So how many freaking shipments of anthrax do you need? And do you calibrate your equipment every single day? Because I would almost think from the bumbliness that it cannot even be possible that you would be that organized.
Part of the levels of protection here in this building. But now they are on the list, the Pentagon Police Agency, as one of the places where they have to go back now, one of at least 30 places around the country, plus Australia, Canada, and South Korea, concerned that they inadvertently got live anthrax from Dugway Proving Ground in Utah rather than the dead anthrax they were supposed to get shipped. Look, the Defense Department says officially there is no threat to public health because all of this was under so-called controlled circumstances, but they will also tell you, Brooke, they are just simply not sure what they're dealing with. They think 12 states and three countries, these numbers are going to grow. They have to test everything because they don't know what the problem is. They don't know how this happened. And they have not, to be clear, been very forthcoming with public information, the workforce, the military here at the Pentagon, the civilian workforce, the news media that works in this building. Nobody has yet been informed formally that the shipment that came to the Pentagon is one of the shipments being investigated.
Yeah, what do you think about that? I mean, even the she works apparently at the Pentagon, that CNN correspondent. I could see she had a Pentagon thing behind her, and I think she is their Pentagon correspondent. But what do you think of that? We don't know. We're not sure what we're dealing with. 30 locations, 3 countries. It's been shipped all over. Oops, they mistakenly, bullshit, they mistakenly shipped live instead of killed. Their procedure has been faulty, is what they've been saying. And if the procedure for killing anthrax has been faulty, first of all, like I said, how many samples have been shipped worldwide over all the years? But number two, what else have they been thinking has been killed, yet has been live? I mean, what a frightening thought. Be afraid, be very afraid, people. And this isn't a joke this time. I always say that because they use the fear. Maybe this is all just a fear tactic, and it better be, because if this is not just a fear tactic, and they have been wantonly shipping this stuff, you know, in Ziploc baggies, isn't that what we discovered in the scandal with the CDC? They thought it was killed, and they were shipping it in Ziploc baggies? So then you have to worry about what the end result is. Well, you know, I've been talking bioterror now and pandemic for quite a while and all these weird diseases that drop out of the sky out of nowhere, never before seen. Well, here's one for ya. Pigmine dropped this to me late last night, and the first thing I thought was, uh-oh. Maybe if there's some audio.
10 days, about 120 or 121,000 animals have died. That's about more than a third of the whole world population of this species. The most.
Yeah, this is a bad recording on this video. Within 10 days, 120,000 of a rare antelope has died, which is about one-third of the entire global population of this antelope in 10 days, guys. Now here, maybe you'll be able to understand the rest.
The extraordinary thing is that it gathers in very large aggregations to give birth of tens of thousands of animals, and within those aggregations where the disease has hit, every single animal has died.
The steppe is littered with carcasses of mothers and calves. It's really dreadful.
It's that size of a goat. It's an ungulate, so that's a kind of antelope. It lives on the steppes of Central Asia and Russia, can migrate up to 1,000 kilometers. It's clear that it's not just an infectious disease or virus or something running through the population on its own, because it's not like it's spread. It's not like one animal gets sick and then the next one gets sick and the next one, they're all getting sick.
The risk exists. I mean, it's a critically endangered species. They're a pretty tough species. They have a high reproductive rate.
Hopefully it's over now, and there'll be enough animals so that in perhaps 5 years it will have rebounded to where it was.
Now, what the hell is causing that? You know, what's disturbing about that is that she said it's not like it's a disease, because it's not like one got sick and then passed it on to another. They all died within 10 days. When they reproduce, they all join in groups. So there was this mass reproducing gaggle of antelopes that had all come together. And I don't know if they were birthing, maybe was going on, but there were just these mountains of all these dead antelopes and babies and everything. And what's interesting is that we looked at the map last night to try to figure out where exactly this was. She said that they typically live in the steppes of southeastern Asia. Southeastern? It would have to be northwestern. I'm trying to think of my geography. Northwestern Asia, as well as Russia. And when I zoomed in on the map, they did put a map in the video. When I zoomed in on the map, it looks like it's right around in Kazakhstan, right near the border of China, right near the border of Russia. And if you zoom out, you'll see the Caspian Sea there, and then you see Iran kind of down below off to the left. And if you go up above and a little bit to the left, you also see Ukraine. and Belarus, Ukraine is where Chernobyl is. I don't know. I was just trying to think, like, what would make 120,000 all died in 10 days from something that hit them like a ton of bricks all at once? So, and they have no idea what's causing it. Now, how scary is that? Are they doing some sort of testing? Are they going to be doing any type of autopsy to discover what's killing them? It was one third of all the world's antelope, that type of antelope, whatever they're called. How frightening is that? You know, is this just preparing us for mass extinction? I mean, I saw a story yesterday, and I get so depressed when I get into Fukushima, so don't make me, please. But this headline, and we've seen this headline so many times, but this is what's making me go boop, 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 alarm, 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 because something's going on that's not good. And we know about all these things. We talked about so many of these things. But listen to this headline. Scientists warn of mass die-off in ocean off California, which I've seen headlines like that probably 100 times now. Official seafloor is littered with dead fish washing up, quote, as far as I could see, unquote. Reports of dead seabirds already coming in. Toxin has spread all the way up and down the West Coast. Experts, very, very unusual, really extraordinary. How is this possible that people are just sitting here watching this as like it's an episode of reality television, and nobody is flipping the fuck out at the breakdown of the biodiversity on this planet? Something very bad is happening right now. And the more we screw around with this mad science gone mad, and I mean, I know they're like, oh, it's a toxin. Oh, it's global warming. Oh, it's climate change. As they're telling us that there's three warm blobs on the Pacific coast. We're not quite sure what they are, but there's three really warm blobs, they keep calling them. And it's so warm that all the wildlife and the ocean and the sea life is dying. Or it's migrating to cooler waters because it's so hot. And oh, it must be El Nino or El Nina, or oh, I'm confused. Maybe it's just the jet stream. Oh, I don't know. They keep making shit up. And they just stir the pot and confuse it, as confusing as it can be. So everybody is misdirected. But I don't know. I'm all about simple. I got one of those brains that I go, okay, look, 2 + 2 = 1, 2, 3, 4! Right? It's that easy. I don't know. When I look at the three hot blobs in the ocean and then I go, oh, guess what? Japan lost 3 blobs and they still haven't found them. How much of a stretch of the imagination is it to think that Fukushima might have something to do with what we see going on in the Pacific Ocean? I don't know. You know, we spend a lot of time, at least on the network, because I know, I mean, I used to spend every show back in the day. That's all I talked about. There's just too much to keep up with. Anybody wants to keep up with the news, go to FukushimaFacts.com. I maintain news there every single day. Or if you're on Facebook, go to FukushimaFacts.com Facebook page. Hit Libby Haleve's show, and many of the news resources that, we pull our news from. I mean, I have a lot of them auto posting to this page. So there's tons of stuff out here, but it makes sure that you have like some tissues. All right. Let's not get too depressed. So if it could get any better than that, let's continue on with the pathogens. It's like the show almost wrote itself last night. Let's do this one. So I thought this was interesting. There may be a solution. And this is thanks to Annabelle Zeta. I've been subscribed to her for a long time. She posted a story yesterday that caught my attention. It says opossums, the unsung heroes against Lyme disease and other tick-borne diseases. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I am just such a fuzzy, little fuzzy animal lover. I always have been. I have had kitty cats since I was very, very, very small, and hamsters, and stuffed animals when I was little, and all of them had to be super fuzzy. I just love any little cuddly animal who's fuzzy. And what's funny is, if you ever saw that movie Dr. Doolittle, that's kind of the way it is for me. And it's been that way since I was young, like cats especially. I don't know what it is, but they just seem to be attracted to me like a magnet. And in my household here, I mean, they literally follow me around like this little band of groupies. Mommy, 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 mommy. You know, it's cute. It's cute most of the time. Anyway, but I just love cute little fuzzy animals. And this little picture of this possum is just so adorable in this picture with the cute little nose and the whiskers. But check this out, because people hate possums, and you shouldn't hate possums. They're cute anyway, so leave little guys alone. We've had a few here. My aunt had a tin roof when I was a kid, and I remember staying there. We went to visit, and we stayed there, and that's what we heard all night long, were the possums dropping out of the trees with their claws, and they'd hit the metal roof and then go all the way down. But I've seen them here a couple times. They get into my compost bin a few years ago. All right, it says several states in the U.S. are recording record populations of ticks and increasing tick-borne disease transmission. Yes, like New York and Connecticut. I would be very, 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 very careful this summer, by the way. I'm telling you, vinegar and water, do some research. It's, you know, it works as a repellent. I would suggest that versus DEET. I mean, I know they say DEET, but who the hell wants to be spraying pesticide all over their open skin and clothing? Not me. But be very, very, very careful around lawn grass and woods this summer. Anytime you go in, I'm so worried about my hair because it's so long. I mean, I'm going to have to, I have like a safari hat that I brought with me. I rode on the ATV the last time because I got so much hair now. And even if I got right in the house, changed and took a shower to make sure I got all the ticks off me. If they were in my hair, my hair is so thick, I don't think I'd be able to get the ticks out of my hair if they got in there. You know, it'd be me sitting here combing for 6 hours with a comb through every strand of hair. So anyway, be very, very, very careful. I might have to wash my hair in vinegar. I mean, that's, you know, actually vinegar is very good for your hair in small doses, but don't do it full strength. It'll strip off the, I think it was the collagen I was reading. Make your hair look all dull. All right, anyway, let me get back here. I'm getting sidetracked. It says, yeah, so there's record populations of ticks and increasing tick-borne transmissions like Lyme disease. But clearing your yard of these blood suckers might only be one opossum away. Yes, that giant rat-looking animal, but he's so cute. That plays dead when threatened and hisses like the devil's spawn when scared is actually extremely beneficial to humans and other mammals. Opossums' diets include snakes, snails, slugs, the three S's, mice, rats, and carrion. Perhaps the most intriguing item is an opossum's daily menu. Is an even more dreaded human foe. Da, 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 the tick. Did you ever watch that cartoon? I love the tick. It was hysterically funny. It was probably back in the 80s, maybe, early 90s. Opossum's voracious appetite for ticks can nearly obliterate a tick population. Holy shit. Let the opossums loose. I want them here. It could obliterate the tick population. Why don't they just, you know, did you guys ever see, this is what it reminds me of. The King, the Lion, the Mouse, and the Cheese, I think is the name of that book. I didn't read it when I was a kid. I remember it, but I didn't read it. But my daughter must have read that book about 100 times. And that's exactly what this reminds me of. The king had mice, so we got cats. He was overrun by mice, so we got cats. And then he was overrun by cats, so we got dogs. Then he was overrun by dogs, so we got cheetahs or something, lions. Then he was overrun by lions, so we got elephants. Then he was overrun by elephants, so he got mice. And he ended up right where he started. Well, we have this Plum Island mad science gone mad tick epidemic loaded with all these new never before seen diseases that, oh, by the way, PAS 1 has no treatment. Let's hope your doctor can keep you comfortable and hope you don't die. They said that on the video. But we have no way to kill these ticks. I mean, I don't see the federal government going, wow, we got all these pathogens out here that are potentially fatal, that completely ruin people's lives if they even come down with Lyme's disease. Yet, we're not doing anything about it. We're running around worrying about eradicating polio or malaria in third world countries, yet we have this epidemic of, oh, I don't know, bazillions of ticks in all the woods that covers the entire northern portion of this country. And I don't know, actually, I don't think that they've made it to the Pacific Northwest, but I can most certainly tell you that the Northeast is mega infected. Interestingly enough, around the vicinities of where Plum Island used to be. Do you mean to tell me you got people suffering and potential suffering on the United States shores? And we're not trying to come up with a way to fix this? Doesn't seem so. That's the other thing that makes this so damn suspicious to me. Almost seems like, man, infect all these wonderful woods that could be used at some point in the future to get your ass out of Dodge. Infect them with killer diseases and use insect as disease vectors. Remember, that was Biowarfare 101. Out of Plum Island and Nazi Germany scientists. And they won't be able to hide in the woods. I don't know. It really, really is suspicious to me. We've done many shows on that. Anybody listening who's going, wow, this chick is whacked, just go to YouTube, UCY.TV's YouTube channel. I think it's just UCY.TV on YouTube. And scroll through the Before the First Cup titles. You'll find a few. Listen. And look at the bottom. There's probably about 30 articles for you to look at where I've based my conclusions on. All right, let's get back to these wonderful little possums that suck ticks for dessert. Yes, this giant rat-looking animal that plays dead when threatened and hisses like devil spawn when scared, that's like me, is actually extremely beneficial to humans and other animals. Opossum's diets include snakes, snails, slugs, mice, rats, and carrion. And perhaps the most intriguing on an opossum's daily menu is an even more dreaded human foe, the tick. Opossum's voracious appetite for ticks can nearly obliterate a tick population. Scientist Rick Ostenfeld points out that few ticks survive a run-in with an opossum. Wow. These animals, often called filthy, are actually remarkable groomers and spend almost all of their free time grooming themselves. Ticks are attracted to these mammals, so their flea and tick-bitten poor little possums. Ticks are attracted to these mammals, but most of them never survive in a possum's body long enough to taste a single drop of blood. Wow. So these possums are walking around the forest floor, hovering up ticks left and right, killing over 90% of these things, and so they are really protecting our health. Michigan State University entomologist Howard Russell told the Detroit Free Press that the tick population is increasing. Russell said that both male and female ticks feed on blood. Oh, I didn't know that. Like in the mosquito world, it's only the female mosquito, but they both male and female bite and suck, man. Russell says both male and female ticks feed on blood, and these thirsty little bloodsuckers can transmit diseases like Lyme and Rocky Mountain spotted fever. You don't see that too much here, but yeah, I know in Colorado apparently you must. I'm thinking so. Something called Rocky Mountain, maybe Montana. Typically here it's the deer tick, by the way. That's how they travel. Robert Pinger, Professor Emeritus of Psychology and Health Science at Ball State University, told Indy Star that in the past couple of decades, the population of the deer tick, which is a host for Lyme disease, has grown exponentially in the U.S. According to Slate, reports of tick-borne diseases have doubled since 2003 and tripled since 1995 in America. So ding, ding, ding. Why is Bill Gates, Mr. Eugenics, not putting his bazillions of dollars to killing ticks and infected ticks here in the United States? It's tripled since 1995. This is 20 years, is it not? 95, 2005, 2015, that's 20 years. Tripled in 20 years. Possum Posse, I don't know what Possum Posse is, bragged about the opossum's powers of fighting our tick foes after reading a study. This is a new paper's authors, Keesley et al., caught a range of tick hosts, white-footed mice, eastern chipmunks, gray squirrels, opossums, veeries, and catbirds, and experimentally infected them with ticks. Poor little guys. They found a huge range of tick success across six host species. Almost half of all ticks introduced onto mice were able to feed, while only 3.5% of all ticks introduced onto the opossum were. And wild possum carried an average of almost 200 ticks. If that's 3.5% of the ticks that try to feed on the possum, that means each possum has at least attracted and eaten up to 5,500 ticks. And that's a night, by the way, people. Oh, it says, that's just in 1 week. So that was in a week. An opossum successfully grooms off and kills an average of 5,686 larval ticks every week. And those are those little teeny tiny ones that I've warned you about that are like the size of the head of a pin that can still get into your skin and suck, and you'll never even see them. They'll look like a pollen grain. When left alone, the possum does not attack pets or other wildlife. He does not chew your telephone or electric wires, spread disease, dig up your flower bulbs, or turn over your trash can. On the contrary, the possum does a great service in insect, venomous snake, and rodent control. He's just like a little, aren't they little weasels? Isn't that what possums are? Or maybe they're not weasels, but they sure look very similar to weasels. Yeah, I don't think they are weasels, but they must be from that same rodentia family somewhere. Maybe little cousins. On the contrary, the opossum does a great service in insect, venomous snake, and rodent control. He takes as his pay only what he eats and maybe a dry place to sleep, hanging upside down by his little rat tail. The possum tolerates our pets, our cars, prodding sticks, rocks, and brooms. Attacks by possums are simply non-existent. And when he gets too close or accidentally moves into your attic space, he can be easily convinced to move along. If you are lucky enough to have one of these guys come around you, you can rest assured that he is cleaning up what he can and will soon move along to help someone else. So be nice to the possums. The possums may save your life someday. Many people use rabies as an excuse for ridding the properties of possums, but that justification is a false one. According to the Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation, opossums are rarely ever found to be rabid and appear to be resistant to many viral diseases such as distemper, parvovirus, and feline hepatitis, and this resistance to disease is also seen with Lyme. Wow, their immune systems must be in high gear, too, especially if they suck up all those infected ticks. The Poughkeepsie Journal, which I'm assuming is out of Poughkeepsie, New York, reports that opossums don't seem to be very good transmitters of Lyme disease, even if they didn't eat almost all the ticks they encounter. Ticks do transmit Lyme, and Lyme affects around 300,000 Americans a year, and a possum normally viewed as nothing more than a filthy nuisance. Stealing garbage, garden surplus, and chicken eggs kills over 5,000 ticks on any given week, and this super exterminator also takes care of venomous snakes, small rodents, cleans up carrion from our yards and fields, perhaps allowing possums to also steal some chicken eggs and garden veggies as a fair trade for decreasing tick-borne diseases. I totally agree. I wanted to share that because this is one of my biggest fears. Yeah, that's a good one, LPV. Does that mean possums would make good pets? Maybe. I mean, I had a few friends who had rats as pets, and they could be trained and litter box trained, and they were just like little dogs, actually, or little cats. All right, so now, we got a few more minutes, and there's a few more things I want to hint. So we were looking at, we started with the live anthrax, so the Pentagon shipping itself live anthrax, then the 120,000 antelopes dying in just 10 days, and that is one-third of that entire population of that type of Saiga, S-A-I-G-A, antelope. Sticking on pathogen stories, we took a look at how possums eat ticks for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, which makes me really happy. And like I said, he is such a little cutie. So now we want to look at this story, and this was kind of frightening. Hopefully, this is not too long of a clip, but I was like, oh my God. And there's a couple of them. Oh, I'm going to run out of time. I'm so mad that the first 15 minutes of my show, I was sitting here talking to myself. Thank you, by the way, for letting me know if that ever happens again. Start messaging me right away. Don't wait 15 minutes. Especially this morning when I woke up and I was just kind of like, ugh. I didn't look at anything. I didn't even open chat. I didn't do anything. I just sat here and talked. All right. Here, we're going to go down to this one. So we talk about the propaganda machine. And, you know, it's still, like I said, it makes me wonder whether or not all this talk about pathogens for the last year and the never before seen and, oh my God, first time on American soil, it hasn't been seen in 50 years, isn't just the drumbeat to convince the dumb American public that the government has your best interest at heart. They have the cure. We have the key. Come take the key. Line up and get your injection. We will fix your disease. I mean, this is, you know, they really, this biopharma medical institution that they are forming that is with the cherry on top, Obamacare, so all your records are going to be in the database, and those pesky HIPAA laws, maybe we can get rid of them so it'll all be about the algorithm in the database. I mean, it makes you wonder if that isn't what this is all about. Make you pliable. So when they fake the next big pandemic, you'll be sitting there sticking your tongue out going, please, please, begging them for you and your children. So a story comes out last night titled, White House Officials and Mainstream Media, and this is just as we saw that chick reporting about anthrax, and it appeared that she was the Pentagon correspondent, and she must have an office there, because she says, well, here in the Pentagon, none of us. I mean, she sounded like she must be like an on-site reporter. So the story comes out, White House officials and mainstream media, where is the line between news and propaganda? You know what? That's a damn good question. So let's check this out really quick.
Well, a longtime aide to President Obama is now joining CNN. Dan Pfeiffer is one of Obama's longest tenured strategists, but after leaving the administration in March, he's decided to join the news ranks as a contributor. And he's only the latest in a growing list of White House aides who have also done the same.
And not even White House aides. I mean, I've seen in a lot of these mainstream clips that Pig Mind posts, I mean, we have former FBI agent, former CIA this, former, you know, they're all part of the establishment, and now they've been moved into positions of being able to spin the yarn. Hey, Anderson Cooper, he's a good example. Stephanopoulos, he's on ABC. I mean, it's like all the CBS has the one dude that was from the FBI, and now he's spun over. He's working for the NYPD as one of their special consultants or whatever in their Cyber Patrol Center.
Joining me around the table, Jake Carney, former White House press secretary, now on the CNN payroll.
Jeb Bush, Mary, let me pick your brain. You worked for another President Bush at one point.
Seen as national security analyst and former Bush Homeland Security advisor Fran Townsend.
And Van Jones, CNN political commentator and former Obama administration official.
There have been quite a few crossovers. Some of them include, as you saw in that clip, Press Secretary Jay Carney, a former Obama advisor, also Van Jones on CNN. Fox, of course, has Dana Perino, former press secretary to George Bush. And MSNBC has former Obama top aides Robert Gibbs and David Axelrod. So is this part of a larger trend here? To discuss, I want to bring in media analyst Lionel of Lionel Media. Hello, Lionel. I want to get your two cents on why we're seeing this migration of aides going from the administration to the news biz.
Well, in full disclosure, I also am from a prior administration, the Harding administration, but I digress. What we're seeing here, what I want you to see and notice, is something that is so brilliant, it might have slipped. In 2003, one of the greatest things ever was the embedded reporter. Where reporters were embedded in military installations to report on what the military were doing. And it was absolutely glowing in terms of how great our brave military were doing. It was brilliant. Now, 2015 and before, now we have embedded White House and government officials embedded in the media. Because you never leave the White House. You never leave Democrat or Republican politics. Once you're there, you just change job titles. So now you have White House operatives, press secretaries, people who are connected and tethered to the administration, now embedded in news media, mainstream news media. It is brilliant. But of course, there will be complete and total objectivity. Of course, there will be absolute crystal clarity in terms of reportage. So nothing to worry about here.
All right, well, do you think that there's a discrepancy, though, that needs to be made between people who are presented by these networks as contributors and people who are presented as journalists? Because, of course, you have the Jay Carney type, but you also have the George Stephanopoulos type. They're very different the way that they're presented as a contributor versus as a actual news presenter, journalist. So a lot of people argue that, you know, viewers understand a contributor is supposed to have a perspective. The assumption when watching the news is that you're going to get a lot of talking heads sharing their opinion. So what do you think about that?
Well, exactly. Let's take the lovable Karl Rove. This was an individual from the Bush administration who was a contributor. George Stephanopoulos not only was a newsman who ran news programs, also ran and questioned and was the interrogator for various debates, and was the Torquemada, so to speak, in attacking, or questioning Hillary's biographer. So there is a distinction. But, dare I say, the American viewing public does not know the difference between a Karl Rove or a Stephanopoulos, or even the forgotten one, Brian Williams, the only person ever to be sanctioned and punished for lying about the Iraq war, even though it had only to do with his own embellishments. So what we're doing, remember, this is 60 years going on. We have had not only government involvement in terms of news propaganda, but we've had the CIA for 60 years from Operation Mockingbird through what Frank Wisner called the Mighty Wurlitzer, where news organizations and special organizations created by the CIA played any tune it wanted. So this is nothing new. It's just repackaged. But remember this term, the embedded White House reporter. That's what this is about.
So if it's presented in a way where you always, you know, distinguish that person and their title and where they're coming from, You don't think it makes any difference whatsoever if when you bring that guest in, you say, you know, former press secretary of so-and-so administration, you don't think that that makes any difference for the viewer?
Well, it should. It sure does to me. What I'd like to hear is this. Mr. Pfeiffer, is there any chance that you will ever, ever take to task President Obama or the Democrats or Al Gore or anybody else you've worked for? Is there any chance that you, who hope to be a Democratic lobbyist and to enjoy tremendous status with the Democratic Party, is there any chance that you could perhaps excoriate the president for TPP or anything else? Wink, wink. Of course not. You and I will realize that. But because of the sea of humanity on all of these shows, I don't know if the average viewer really parses and really identifies the origin and the provenance, dare I say, of those individuals who are doing this. So for people enlightened like you and me, absolutely, we know precisely what it is. But it doesn't matter because the whole thing is so contaminated. The whole effort is so contaminated. At least
I can't. This guy's ranting worse than me. Anyway, you know what? Put on a seatbelt, because anyone who sits there and says, oh, yeah, well, you know, I saw it on the news, who didn't think that there was propaganda going on before, I mean, they have all their own cronies in there now just blabbing whatever the hell they're told to say. And that might have been because there was some pushback. If you remember back a few months ago, there were quite a number of journalists, television journalists that were standing up and quitting because they weren't telling the truth or were being told what to say. So they just took care of that. They put talking heads into the seats of the talking heads. All right, guys. Well, you know, we're quickly running out of time. Tomorrow's going to be a really exciting show because I have some scary ass shit that I didn't get to today that we're going to start out with tomorrow. And I'm going to make sure that my mic is plugged in. I'm going to have to cut the show now down to 45 minutes after it's over, get rid of all that dead air. But listen, I don't know if you knew this, but I got a press release from CERN. CERN, the place of the Large Hadron Collider, LHC experiments to explore new frontiers in physics. Early tomorrow morning, Geneva time, which this was from yesterday, so this is today, the CERN Large Hadron Collider will attempt to start delivering physics data for the first time in 27 months after almost a two-year shutdown and several months of recommissioning. Yes, they had a big fire. The LHC experiments are ready to take data at an unprecedented energy level of 13 tetravolts, almost double the collision energy of its first run. This will mark season number 2 at the LHC, opening way to new discoveries. And yes, there was a whole section that I had read. They're like, oh, maybe we can find like other dimensions or dark matter, of course. Don't worry about it. All right, people, make sure you stick around. It's Wednesday. Josh is up live at 6. Continual Condition at 8. Truth or Talk with April and Burstein at 9. And 11 with Nick Burnaby and TV and AT Media. All right, guys. We will catch up with you tomorrow.
scary story now about security lapses at one of the government's most secret and dangerous laboratories. Doors have been left unlocked to areas where scientists test potential biological weapons like anthrax, and it's happened again and again. ABC's Pierre Thomas is on the case in Washington. Good morning, Pierre.
Hi, George. You would think that safety and security would be at the highest level at a government lab housing some of the most dangerous microbes on the planet. But according to some internal CDC emails, you may want to think again.
Anthrax, monkeypox, virulent strains of flu, the SARS virus, all potentially lethal, and all stored at a CDC laboratory in Atlanta, supposedly under the most stringent of conditions. But internal emails first obtained by USA Today and confirmed this morning by ABC News raised serious questions about security at the sensitive facility. The emails from a CDC employee report multiple instances of doors left unlocked between 2009 and 2010, allowing access to the deadly strain. The documents also show an unauthorized person made it past security and into an area he was not allowed. And news of these security incidents come on the heels of another recent report that potentially contaminated air from one of the research labs made its way out of a controlled area.
As we are dealing with nasty agents that we need to have maximum containment. And if they get released or discharged from that facility, it could be problematic.
A CDC official tells ABC News that the public was never at risk, but that any lapse in physical security at the agency is addressed immediately. Some scientists believe the CDC needs independent oversight.
CDC has excellent biologists, microbiologists, and that. But for running a lab safely, you need more expertise than just being a good biologist or a laboratory technician.
As its own police, it's probably fair to say the CDC is not happy with these failures. Robin?
All right there, Pierre. Thank you. Dr. Richard Besser is here, the former acting head of the CDC. You're here to talk about something else, but first, your reaction to this.
Well, I think it's clear that no laboratory should have oversight of itself. You need an independent group looking at them, and I think CDC would go for that. I think that's what has to happen.
Yeah, a lot of people feel that way.
That's right.
Imagine if you were able to choose to become a better version of yourself. We're not talking health and fitness, but a bit like upgrading your phone. It's a pretty chilling thought, but a leading historian reckons one day humans will be able to become cyborgs, part man, part machine, and able to live forever. Professor Yuval Noah Harari of the University of Jerusalem thinks that this could happen within 200 years or so to wealthy humans as they gradually merge with technology like computers and smartphones. But what are cyborgs? According to Google, they are fictional or hypothetical people whose physical abilities are extended beyond normal human limitations by mechanical elements built into the body. Harari says it will be the greatest evolution in biology since the appearance of life, and that we will be as different from today's humans as chimps are now from us. He argues that we have become the dominant species because of our ability to invent fictions like religion and money, the kind of things that help bind society together. But he has said the decline of belief in religion will spur on change to the human race, as if we humans are saying we don't need God, just technology. Harari believes humans are driven by dissatisfaction and that we would not be able to resist the temptation to upgrade ourselves. He has warned, however, that the cyborg technology would only be available to the wealthiest people in society, widening the gap between rich and poor. Which could maybe even mean that the rich could one day live forever, whilst the poor die out.